Tonight we're going to be looking at a situation as they had finished dividing out the land. Joshua had given the tribes that were on the east side of the Jordan permission to go back, and there was some conflict that arose. I think every time the Lord works, it seems conflict wants to arise. It arises in our life, it arises in our family life. And we know that the author here was writing in this chapter about when the Israelites, how they handled and how they resolved a dispute over a large altar that had been built on the west side of the Jordan by those who lived on the east side of the Jordan. You see, maybe where they began coming up with a conflict there that happened. And I think if we look in our own lives, that there's times that we must deal with conflict within our own family to restore unity. I don't know about you, if there's ever been a conflict between you and someone in your family. It has been with me, maybe with friends. But with that thought in mind that we have to deal with it, we might ask the question, how can we resolve conflict within the family? And I believe the best way to do that is by looking at God's Word and seeing. And tonight we're going to look in Joshua, how he did it. And I want to share with you four steps that we must work through to resolve conflict within the family. You've got that there on your little handout. Four steps that we must work through to resolve conflict within the family. Joshua 22, to resolve conflict, one must work through misconceptions. To resolve conflict, we must work through misconceptions. And we're going to begin to look here as these four steps that we're working through. We're going to look at how this played out in Joshua chapter 22. If you'll turn there to verse 9, I want us to read and begin to listen. And I want us to maybe, you can talk a little bit tonight and let's process this through so that we can learn how to address conflict. But to resolve conflict, beginning in verse 9, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh returned home and departed from the sons of Israel at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go to the land of Gilead, to the land of their possession, which they had possessed according to the command of the Lord through Moses. Let me just pause there. We've got Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Remember when they were getting ready to cross over, before they went into the promised land, these two tribes and this half-tribe wanted to stay on the other side, stay on the east side of the Jordan. So that's who we're dealing with. Now they're returning back to their land. They've gone over. Remember, Joshua said, just like Moses did, you can have this land for your inheritance if you will go over with the rest of them until all the land is defeated, and then you may return. So that's where we're at. They're returning. Now let's pick up at verse 10. It says, when they came to the region of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh built an altar there by the Jordan, a large altar in appearance. And the sons of Israel heard it, said, behold, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh has built an altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region of the Jordan on the side belonging to the sons of Israel. When the sons of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel gathered themselves at Shiloh to go up against them in war. Sounds a little harsh there, doesn't it? You have a group that wanted to stay on the outside of the land of Canaan. They have their land. They fulfilled what they've done. They've gone in. Now they're going back. But if you notice, these who live, because we got to get this down so we'll understand in a minute, those who live on the east side of the Jordan, these two and a half tribes, were making their way back, but before they crossed the Jordan, they went and they built a large altar on the inside of the land of Canaan. Where did this take place at? If you'll see there in verse 10, it says, when they came to the region of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan. Where is the region of Jordan? If we go back and we look in the Hebrew, we find the name Gilgal. You have your map. Suzanne's already picking it out there. Look at your map real quick. And do you see the word Gilgal about the very middle of your map? What do you see that's close to that? What other town is close to it?
Jericho.
When the tribes and all of the Israels came, they're on the east side of the Jordan. They cross over to go in and possess the land. They go over and they come to Gilgal. So this group is now making their way back. What did they do? Remember when they went through Jericho, the water parted for them? And they took some stones and they built an altar. But we also know that they built an altar for the temple of the Lord or the tabernacle. But here is where they crossed over. So right where they crossed over, they're going back over. But they're still on the inside and they build this altar. It's not just any altar. Look there at the last of verse 10. And what do you see? It was a large altar in appearance. Not just some little altar, but a large altar. And they say that they heard of what had happened and that they come along and built it in their land and they wanted to go up to war against them. Why did they want to go up to war against them? Because in their mind, what they have done here is evil. Because the only place that you can build an altar to worship God and to sacrifice is at the tabernacle of God. This is not at the tabernacle of God. So in their mind, this is evil. And according to the law, they have the right to kill them and to annihilate them. So here we have a conflict within the family because you have the whole 12 tribes of Israel. And now there's a division coming because there's some misconception about what's happening. They're thinking what they did was evil. Not only did they build another altar, but they built one large. They also had a problem because in their mind, there was a misconception to what where they built it. It said that in the region of Canaan, on the side belonging to the sons of Israel. In their mind, they're saying if they're going to do this evil thing, they should have just went on over to their area, to their land, and they build it. But there's a misconception going on, and we're going to see that in a moment. But there's also the misconception of why they did it. I found it interesting in reading this and looking at it in verse 11 and 12 at the beginning. It says, and the sons of Israel heard it. Well, my first question, who in the world's running their mouth? That's where a lot of conflict starts. Somebody saw something, and they don't know what in the world is going on, but they can begin to talk, and that's exactly what happened here. And what happens when you have conflict, you have a break in union. I want you to notice, and we're going to see this again in just a moment, but verse 12 says, when the sons of Israel heard it, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel gathered themselves at Shiloh to go up against them in war. Does something sound a little funny there to you? The whole congregation of Israel. Well, who is Israel? 12 tribes. You've got 10.5 tribes fixing to go up against 2.5 tribes. I wouldn't say it's the whole congregation. There is a division that has started right here. And we're going to see that in a moment, how this division plays out. Because in their mind, they are now separating themselves from the rest for this evil thing that happened. So to resolve conflict, we must first work through misconceptions. And how do we work through misconceptions? But to resolve conflict, we must also work through accusations. There's fixing to be some accusations here. This is something that needs to happen, is to work through, to resolve it, to work through these accusations. How do you work through an accusation? Well, the first thing you do is you must go to the one you're having a problem with. As long as Suzanne and I have a problem with Joe, and Suzanne and I keep talking, that resolves nothing. We have to get with Joe. And we have to understand that most likely there's some misconception there. Maybe what Joe did wasn't what we think Joe did. Or maybe we don't understand why he did that. So to resolve this conflict, you must work through the accusations. You must send someone there. So let's see what the Israelites did. Look at verse 13. Then the sons of Israel sent to the sons of Reuben and to the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh into the land of Gilead, because they've gone back to their land, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, and with him 10 chiefs, one chief for each father's household from each of the tribes of Israel, and each of them was the head of his father's household among the thousands of Israel's. They came to the sons of Reuben and to the sons of Gad, to the half-tribe of Manasseh, to the land of Gilead, and they spoke with them, saying, "Thus says the whole congregation of the Lord, what is this unfaithful act which you have committed against the God of Israel, turning away from following the Lord this day by building yourself an altar to rebel against the Lord this day? Is it not the iniquity of Peor enough for us, from which we have not cleansed ourselves to this day? Although a plague came on the congregation of the Lord, that you must turn away from this day from following the Lord. If you rebel against the Lord today, he will be angry with the whole congregation of Israel tomorrow. If, however, the land of your possession is unclean, then cross into the land of possession of the Lord, where the Lord's tabernacle stands, and take possession among us. Only do not rebel against the Lord or rebel against us by building an altar for yourself besides the altar of the Lord our God. Did not Achan the son of Zerah act unfaithfully in things under the ban? And wrath fell on the congregation of Israel, and the man did not perish alone in his iniquity." They're concerned because the group of Israel that has traveled through the wilderness has experienced two different times mentioned right here where someone did something evil and it turned and ended up affecting all of them. Find it interesting that he mentioned the iniquity of Peor. You find that in Numbers 25. What was the iniquity? But that's where they began to worship the Baal. Baal of Peor. The women came in, the men began sleeping with the women of that area. They led them away, and because God's anger turned, thousands upon thousands of them began to die because God was punishing them. And Phinehas, who we see here, which is the son of Eleazar, Phinehas the priest, back in Numbers 25 at Peor, saw what was happening. And he took drastic measures. You might remember he took a spear and he went and he drove it through someone to kill them to stop what was going on. So here we have that being reminded. They're going to send Phinehas, the priest. I found it interesting that there are two different Phinehases mentioned in the Bible. Both Phinehases are priests. You have this Phinehas here, which is the son of Eleazar, who was the son of Aaron. But do you remember you had Eli and he had Ophni and Phinehas that were both priests? They were wicked. Ended up becoming wicked. But we have them here. So what do we see? Verse 13, here we see that Israel sent. They chose the priest, the leader, and then they chose 10 men, which would be the head of each of the tribes. It's 10 because you have that half-tribe of Manasseh is represented the other half is represented. They send these men, and they send them to go and to speak. We see in 15, they went to where they were, and they spoke to them. When we have a problem, when we have a conflict that we need to resolve, we need to deal with some accusations. You have to work through that, and I believe the best way is to go to that person where they are. Going to keep me and Suzanne and Joe going in this conversation. Can you see me and Suzanne have a problem with Joe and we call up Joe? Hey, get over here. We want to talk to you. You think he's coming? No. But if we go to him and we go to him and we speak to him, and because we know that there's probably misconceptions, we need to go and we need to put out there before him what it is that we are concerned about. And we see here four things that they're concerned about, four of the accusations that they put here under your resolving through accusations. They said that they were unfaithful in their act, said that they had committed against God, that they were turning away from following the Lord. And 16 finishes that they were rebelling against the Lord. It's important that we pick up on those three things right there. They point out that they're unfaithful. They're being unfaithful by building an altar. That is against the law. The altar is only at the tabernacle where God resides at. So they're unfaithful. Said, you're going to go and you're going to worship other gods at this altar that you built. How dare you do that and be unfaithful? Said you're going to worship there and you're going to do things you're not supposed to. And because of that, you're turning from God. You're no longer obeying God by going to the altar at the temple group, but you're going to do it here. You're turning away from what it is to follow your own things. And it says that they're rebelling against the Lord. That's another thing that they are accusing him of. They're presenting to them what their conflict is. They're concerned, and again, you see here the whole congregation of the Lord. The problem with that is it's not the whole congregation, but they're making a separation. We are inside the promised land. We're inside Canaan, where God said he was going to give us. We're doing what we're supposed to, but you chose to stay on the other side. And now here you are building an altar to worship and to sacrifice, which is not where it's supposed to be. So they're holding out a little bit of reservation here. They have distanced themselves. They're separating themselves at this point, not calling them the way the author is writing it. They're not even concluding them or including them into the congregation of Israel because there's this strife that's going on. And it tells us that verse 19 that, you know, where the Lord's tabernacle is, that's the only place. They're saying, you know, if your land is no good, they did invite him and said, why don't you come on back into the promised land, take for you an inheritance so that you can worship where you're supposed to. You're only to worship there. You can only sacrifice for forgiveness and grain offerings. You can worship at the tabernacle. It's the only one where it stands. So they have gone to them. They have acknowledged to them what their concerns were. But it can't stop there with the accusation. You have to wait for a response. I can come, Suzanne and I, we can go jump all over Joe and then leave. What good did that do? We can tell Joe everything he did wrong. And you know what? We can even be like the Israelites. We can tell everything Joe did wrong, and I can prove it in the Bible. I can show you in the Bible where you're just wrong. Conflict arises out of that. But they waited for a response. Look now at verse 21. The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh answered and spoke to the heads of the families of Israel. The mighty one God, the Lord, the mighty one God, the Lord, he knows, and may Israel itself know if it was in rebellion or if in an unfaithful act against the Lord, do not save us this day. If we built us an altar to turn away from following the Lord, or if to offer a burnt offering or a grain offering on it, or if to offer sacrifice of peace offering on it, may the Lord himself require it. But truly, we have done this out of concern for a reason, saying, in time to come, your sons may say to our sons, what have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has made the Jordan a border between us, and you, your sons of Reuben and sons of Gad, you have no portion in the Lord. So your sons may make our sons stop fearing the Lord. They gave a response. You can hear, by the way, it's written and punctuated in here. They were fervent. I believe they were upset because what they did was out of good faith. What they did had a reason and a purpose to it. See, remember, we have to resolve and work through misconceptions. Many times we just jump on our own bandwagon. We begin to make accusations. But listen, it tells us that they answered them. But I find it very interesting. Verse 22, where it begins, the mighty one, the God, the Lord, the mighty one, God, the Lord. They're using three different names here for God. The mighty one is El, capital E and a small L. You see a lot of times if you look in there, we hear of El Shaddai or El Adonai or all of these names of God. El is a name for God. And then we have in the English the word God, that's Elohim. That's the one that we see in Genesis, Elohim, talking about the Trinity. And then they say the Lord, or that would be his covenant name that is translated Lord, is Yahweh, that he is speaking to them. So they're calling out and they're calling on the Lord. It says that he knows. They're calling on God to defend them. But look there, even how much more powerful they say at the end of 23, that if we did all this the way you're saying, and if it was for the wrong reasons, may the Lord require. Basically, may the Lord take our life if what we did. But listen to how they respond. I saw some of you writing. You remember what they accused them of? They accused them of being unfaithful, doing unfaithful acts, turning away and rebelling. And look at the words used there, verse 22. If it was in rebellion, or if an unfaithful act against the Lord, 23, or if we have built us an altar to turn away from following the Lord. They're responding to exactly what they said. They're using the same words. Israel, those on the east side in the promised land, have accused them out of a misconception of what they did, and they're saying plainly, that's not why we did this. We didn't do it to be an unfaithful act to the Lord. We didn't do it so that we could go and sacrifice there. We know the only place to sacrifice is at the temple. But look at verse 24. Now that they have given this and they're working through this accusation, but truly we have done this out of concern. You see, they begin here expressing, we did this out of a concern. In time to come, your sons may say to our sons, what have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? For the Lord God has made the Jordan a border between us and you. And your sons of Reuben and sons of Gad have no portion in the Lord, so your sons may make our sons stop fearing the Lord. Did you hear something different there with the group of people? The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad. Well, what happened to the other half-tribe of Manasseh that was with them? What these group was looking for when they built this large altar was to show later down. It said that maybe y'all in the promised land, as generations go on, will say, hey, you see that river? That's a dividing mark. Y'all are not in the promised land. You have no part of God. Well, that half tribe of Manasseh has another half tribe that is in the promised land. So they're automatically going to be associated with being in the promised land. But the reason that they did it is because they were concerned that there would come a day that the division would be made through later generations, that they don't have no portion here, and would eventually cause the others to begin to believe that and not want to worship the Lord. So to resolve conflict, one must work through the misconceptions. One must also work through accusations. And to resolve conflict, one must work through motivations. Why was it done? We live in a generation today that is all about the whys. Lane can probably tell you that being over school. You tell them to do something, why? Everything you ask, why? If you got kids growing up now, you hear why. But if we want to resolve conflict, I think we really need to work through the motivation. Help me understand why you did this. Help me understand why you built a large altar on my side of the river. Okay, you've told me that you didn't do it for all of these. What happened? Let's look there, verse 22, because it can help us to understand why someone did something and what their motives were. Look at verse 26. Therefore we said, let us build an altar, not for burnt offering or for sacrifice. Rather, it shall be a witness between us and you and between our generations after you that we are to perform the service of the Lord before him with our burnt offerings and with our sacrifices and with our peace offerings, so that your sons will not say to our sons in time to come, you have no portion in the Lord. Therefore, we said, it shall also come about, if they say this to us or to our generation in time to come, then we shall say, see the copy of the altar of the Lord, which our fathers made, not for burnt offering or for sacrifice. Rather, it is a witness between us and you. Far be it from us that we should rebel against the Lord and turn away from following the Lord this day by building an altar or a burnt offering, for grain offering, or for sacrifice besides the altar of the Lord our God, which is before his tabernacle. So what is their motivation? It is not what they were misunderstood about. It's not what they had been accused of, but they wanted a witness. Now, you've heard me say several times, what is a distinctive word? And I want you to look at this in verse 10. What is a distinctive word that describes the altar they built? Great. It's a large altar. They took it as an offense. Why is it a large altar? Let me ask you this question. How well can you see this from where you're at? Versus how well can you see this? They built it as a witness. And it tells us that they made it as a copy. It's large in size so that when they are on the other side of the Jordan River, they can see it. And it will remind them that we're to go to the altar of the Lord where his tabernacle is. It's also built large so that those on the other side, when they see it, will be reminded. Okay? They had a problem because of where they built it. But they built it there so it would be a reminder to both of them, those on the east that we have to go into the promised land to worship, but those on the west that it was built by those on the east to show they are part. You see, it was large for a reason. It was just a copy. It was to remind them, but they didn't build it small where nobody could see it. I mean, we could go out here and we could put a little cross about this big in the yard. It wouldn't do nothing. But you drive down Interstate 20, go into Bossier, and you get close to Houghton, what you see, the big cross. People see it. It makes people ask questions. It's a reminder. If it wasn't large, no one would see it. So they built it. What was their motivation? They wanted to keep the unity, not disunity. See, there's a misconception. They thought they were trying to break away. They wasn't doing it to sacrifice on it. There's another misconception. They were doing it so that it could be a witness between both generations to say you do have a portion. When they see it, that it would be a copy. It was not unfaithful to the Lord. It was not turning away from the Lord. It was not rebellion. They did it for unity, the exact same thing because of the misconception they told them they were doing. So do you see how you can begin to resolve conflict when you come together and you talk it and you find out that I didn't do exactly what you were saying. There was a little misconception there, but also here's why I did it. I did it because I wanted to keep unity. We did it for whatever reason. And lastly, to resolve conflict, one must work through resolutions. One must work through resolutions. Must come to resolve. Look there at verse 30. So when Phinehas, that was the leader, the priest, and the leaders of the congregation, even the heads of the families of Israel who were with him, heard the words which the son of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the sons of Manasseh spoke, it pleased them. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, said to the sons of Reuben and to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Manasseh, today we know that the Lord is in our midst because you have not committed this unfaithful act against the Lord. Now you have delivered the sons of Israel from the hand of the Lord. Then Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and the leaders returned from the sons of Reuben, from the sons of Gad, and from the land of Gilead, back to the land of Canaan. So the sons of Israel, and brought back word to them. The word pleased the sons of Israel, and the sons of Israel blessed God, and they did not speak of going up against him in war to destroy the land in which the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad were living. The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad called the altar witness, for they said it is a witness between us and the Lord is God. Us, that the Lord is God. Resolution. You have to work through a resolution. They came to what? An agreement. They brought up, here's the problem. They say, here's what it actually is. Here's why we did it. It pleased them. It tells us there at verse 30. And then you have where Phinehas and all of the leaders, they go back over and they go back to the Canaan, back to the promised land. And you got all these people who have been going, yang, 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 yeah, because they heard it. But it says that they brought back word to them.
Did they get jealous to start with and then cause the ruckus, turn it around on the other side?
No, I just think that they were thought that they were doing evil is more of what it was. Because, I mean, they even offered them to come back over. But what happens, let's bring it here. Suzanne and I have conflict with Joe. But guess what? Everybody else in the room knows that Suzanne and I have conflict with Joe. Well, Suzanne and I go to Joe, we resolve it. Guess what? Everybody else in the room still thinks we got a problem. They had to bring back word. I believe those who are involved need to know. And they come to an agreement. They come back. It tells us they brought the word back and it pleased them. And they shared with the others that were involved. And then because they've worked through this, it says at 33 that they did not speak of going against them in war to destroy them. They dropped the grievance. They were ready. They had the law on their side to go and to attack. But now that they've heard it, it's been discussed, it's been brought out in the light, they've worked through the processes, through the steps, they found out why it's happened, they dropped it, and then it says, now we had this altar that was built, it was built for a witness, but now they've actually made the declaration in verse 33. The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad called the altar, they're giving it a name, witness. What does that mean, they're giving it a name, witness? That means everyone's going to know what this altar is called. It's called a witness. And it said, for it is a witness between us that the Lord is God. So to resolve conflict, one must work through misconceptions. I think that's where it all starts from most of the time, is a misconception. And then we have to work through to resolve through the accusations. We need to specify. We need to be specific. You know, it's one thing, I just call up Joe, I got a problem with you. And it, okay, what? You know, I've got some things that have gone on in my life that I've tried to resolve, but because there's been the refusal of talking on the other side, it's not been able to be resolved because the step was broken. You know exactly what's going on. There's misconception, but you got to talk. But guess what? You can't just accuse. You got to stop and listen. What they always say, God gave us one mouth and two ears. We need to listen. And then we need to work through the motivations. Why was it done? And then we work through the resolution. We both come together. We decide, hey, here it is. And guess what? When that happens, you can resolve conflict and you can keep unity. Why is this important? Why is this in Scripture? Why was this recorded? Because all this happened. I mean, it wasn't written down so it would happen. It already happened. It recorded after the fact. Because I believe where we can take it, as they say, we can make a bridge from the Bible to Stanley, Louisiana. There are conflicts that arise within families that need to be resolved. And this is how you do it, to keep unity. Maybe between friendships. But we could probably bring it a little closer home. How many times have you ever known there to be a conflict arise and cause division in a church? This is God's people that this is writing about, the 12 tribes. And instead of letting it fester and split, you have to be active in resolving that conflict. Each of these steps you see here, something happened. There was action involved. They sent somebody. They spoke to somebody. They listened to somebody. It is easy in our minds when conflict happens just to step back and let it take care of itself. How many times does that work? We need to be proactive. We need to step in there. And we can resolve conflict by addressing the conflict in these four steps.